calling Senate Transportation Committee to order on February the 21st, 2005. I'd like to welcome everyone here and thank you for your patience. We are running into overlapping schedules. We've been experiencing that for the last several weeks. But today, it is our pleasure to welcome a very special guest, Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who's going to be with us to talk about transportation issues and also bring us news from Washington, D.C. And we don't get this every week, I can tell you. So it's just great to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I deeply appreciate the courtesy of you and the committee to spend a few minutes talking about an area that you are going to be wrestling with in the course of this session, and one that we will be continuing on the federal level. So hopefully after 6 extensions of the Surface Transportation Act, perhaps reenact T21 to give some sense of certainty to our state partners about what the federal partnership is going to look like. I hope that I could, with your permission, share a little bit of what I think the status is currently, and then perhaps we could engage in a bit of a conversation about how that fits with what some of your plans are on the state level, because I'm keenly interested in understanding, as best we can, putting an Oregon face on the transportation challenges that we face as a state, and the critical role the legislature is going to play dealing with providing the tools that we all rely upon. The federal government only provides 3% of the total transportation budget in this country. The vast majority, as you know, and occasionally your constituents remind you, is money that they pay out of their own pocket every day for their automobiles, for their transit, for their personal infrastructure for transportation. Government only provides about 10% of that total, but it's an important 10% because it's the roads, the bridges, the transit. The federal government, every 6 years, is supposed to reauthorize the Surface Transportation Act. ICE-T in 1991 was T21, that has provided the backbone for the federal expenditure. Unfortunately, we have been unable as a Congress in the last session to reach agreement, although I will say in the House of Representatives, our Transportation Committee, in which I sit, Congressman DeFazio sits, we very quickly reached a bipartisan agreement, passed a bill out of our committee unanimously, that would have given state and local governments an investment that was what the United States Department of Transportation said was necessary to keep pace with inflation and growth, $375 billion over the next 6 years. Unfortunately, it was not possible to reach accord between the two chambers and the administration, and so 6 times we've had to extend the Surface Transportation Act. The current extension expires May 31st. It does look a little more optimistic about the possibility of passing the authorization this time, because the administration, which earlier had set a figure of $256 billion as their target, which was lower than what either the House or the Senate wanted, has raised its figure this time to be more in keeping with what the House had originally passed as a compromise of about $289 billion. So the number's higher. We are hearing, and I noticed in the audience today, there are a number of people that I know are knocking on your door, but we see them in Washington, D.C., and their national affiliates, making the case that the most important single investment we can make for the economy, for the environment, for the future, is to be able to adequately support our transportation infrastructure. We are planning to go to markup early this next month in the House. So we'll see an outline of legislation that will give you a sense of what the point of departure is. And there's bipartisan support on our committee to try and move this forward. It may not be a perfect bill. It's certainly not what I want, you know, what we are lobbied for by people in this room, and I think what our constituents would pay for, based on all the survey research that we've seen and what I hear back home from business and from groups of and organizations that are concerned about the future. But it's moving in the right direction. So we will very likely, and I would, as I said, I think there's a 50-50 chance that you will have a pretty good idea of where we are going before you finish your deliberations. I am personally very optimistic that there will be some more attention paid to the critical notion of freight movement. This is something that I know this committee has been paying attention to, that the last couple sessions of legislature moved forward in additional infrastructure and investment financing. There are proposals out that I've been briefed on informally that you may be considering that might provide additional resources for a balanced approach in Oregon, connecting some of these critical elements, particularly as it speaks to some of the intermodal opportunities. I hope you will consider adding rail to your equation as part of the movement of freight to take some pressure off the congested roadways. And this is going to be an area of considerable controversy and debate in Congress. But there is a strong constituency on our committee to elevate rail transportation, both in terms of freight and passenger. I commend what the legislature has done in recent years for the Oregon partnership with our Amtrak, which is the sixth most active Amtrak segment in the country, and the potential we have not just between Eugene and Seattle, down at the Amtrak station in Klamath Falls, the opportunity for tying in your world-class wildlife refuge down there with people on who might be a part of train tourism. There are things that creatively could bring activity to other parts of our state, as well as tying us into a broader national network. There are some clouds on the horizon, I will say. There's a big controversy about the donor, donee state in terms of the equation. There is going to be a push in the House of Representatives by some people off our committee to kind of perhaps redirect that discussion in the direction of the bill in a way that may not be favorable to Oregon. We will be watching that very closely in the next couple of weeks. That will come into focus, and we will be coming back to you with information about that, because it would have significant consequences in terms of diverting further money away from our state. And we would encourage you, if you are so inclined, in looking at that, if you wanted to add a bipartisan voice about keeping the basic integrity of the bill as it's been moving forward, it might be important as part of those deliberations. And as I say, we will signal this to you as soon as that becomes more clear. I commend you for the work that you are doing looking at the needs of Oregon, and I would be very interested in being able to continue discussion with you as you are doing your deliberations to make sure that we understand ways that we can mesh together the federal transportation funding policies, the authorization, and the annual budget that will be coming forward. We have, as you know, two areas of concern. One is what is authorized by formula, the money that just kind of flows, and then there is what happens in terms of the annual appropriation through the legislative process. And in both of these, we want to make sure that we're sensitive to what you've identified as priorities, working with, frankly, what I think is one of the best transportation departments in the country. It's my privilege to do a lot of work nationally in other communities, do a lot of work with other state commissions and department administrations, and I would say that I have not encountered another commission or department anywhere in the country that has done a better job of creatively stretching the resources, keeping faith with citizens at a time when everybody's convinced they're not getting their fair share. I will tell you that people around the country look to what Oregon has done with not a great wealth of resources to coax a lot out of those investments. And it's my privilege to work with them and with you. And we look forward at this point to responding to any questions or if there are comments that you have that you think that I would benefit from. I would welcome the opportunity.
Thank you so very much. I think there are probably a lot of questions. I can think of about 10 just for me, and I won't do that. What I would like to just take an opportunity to say to you is that the small ports in Oregon are just so vital to our economy, and they have to go each year, you know, and beg for money in order to get dredging. Down at Reedsport, we've made a lot of effort to bring in American Bridge. In order for them to fulfill their contracts, they must be able to barge, and yet they weren't even in the list, which gave them quite a shock. To find that they weren't even listed for dredging money. And so I would raise that, particularly from the district that I represent, District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Lincoln City, and there are a number of small ports. The Transportation Senate Transportation Committee went on a road trip, and we went to the Port of Umpqua, and it was their delight to have a Senate committee to come, but it also was our privilege to be able to listen to them and what they had to say. And I'm going to ask Senator Brzezinski if he might talk a little bit about one of the things that we learned about while we were there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Congressman Blumenhauer, thank you for being here. It's really an honor and privilege to have you here coming in and sharing us with us what's happening in D.C. I had the opportunity, after we had this meeting, that was a week ago Friday, to see Peter DeFazio, and then Jim Oberstar was out visiting with him, and I brought it to their attention. They both kind of scratched their head. What we heard from the port manager in Umpqua is that fresh fish coming over the bar is not considered commerce. As if those fish are frozen in a container going out, that's commerce. And that's one of the ways they decide on whether or not there's going to be funding to actually dredge the bar area to make certain that you can get ships and commercial ventures in and out. And it's one of those things I've asked her, just for your knowledge, her name is Penny Bryson, and she's the port manager for Port of Umpqua. And she's put together a letter that I was going to forward up to Peter at his request after hearing this. And it basically says that says the fishing fleets between Reedsport as well as Winchester Bay creates over $1 million for those two small communities. The dollars roll over seven times in those communities. And what concerns them is that that fresh fish product is not classified as commerce. There is over a million pounds of fresh fish brought in at the port's fishing dock in the past year. Not one ounce of it was counted as commerce. And then she said that when she was at a meeting in Hood River with the Corps, they were told at that time that, yeah, fresh fish doesn't count, but frozen fish going in a container does. So I don't know if there's anything we can do to help the Corps to maybe adjust their definitions, but it seems to me that if we got it incoming, that should be just as important as getting it out, because you ain't going to get out if it's not coming in.
Absolutely. Well, so I appreciate your sharing it with me, and I'm scratching my head too, but I'm thinking that there are a number of my colleagues around the country who have some interest in the fishing industry who would be caught by the same definition, which may have broader ramifications. So I would be happy to explore with Congressman DeFazio and Congressman Oberstar, but also some of our friends in some of the other smaller fishing communities in coastal areas to see what might happen there. I will say that it has been frustrating for me. Every session I have been in Congress now, the dredging of Oregon ports has been shortchanged. There are some people who feel that the government shouldn't be involved in dredging. It's kind of an ideological, I'm trying to think of a polite way of describing it, but it's quite frustrating because without these dredging activities, small ports would never be able to provide the resources on their own. And there's strong evidence that even some of the larger ports wouldn't be able to get the private sector to make sure that the dredge activity is available when it's needed. And this could have disastrous effects, like the next time Mount St. Helens goes. These are not small issues, and it's been it's getting worse, not better. But one of the things I can state, I think without exception, that there is a bipartisan interest in Oregon and Washington to keep this service, essential service, to be provided. And the definitional thing is new to me, but I'm sad to say that this has been a struggle, because I've only been there 10 years, but every year it comes up, and it seems to be getting tougher. I will do everything I can to be supportive of that effort, and I appreciate getting a broader picture here of how it works.
Oh, if you'd like, I'll CC a copy of it.
Would you too?
I mean, it's really was pretty ironic because what we've heard from the Corps, from the port, it seems like the Corps, because of maybe their limitations on funding, continue to change what the criteria is going to be to measure. And you think you've got one thing, and all of a sudden it's been changed again.
But I think part of what the problem the Corps faces is that there are people who don't believe that government should be providing the service, who have put language in that has made it increasingly difficult over time for the Corps to provide that. And if you couple that with the fact that the Corps budget that the administration has put up is probably the most significant cuts we've seen, the combination of these two does put them in a difficult position, but I'm hopeful that Congress will continue to push back a little bit and be of some assistance at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, certainly if the definition of commerce is dependent on the dredging, then we surely do want a good definition. Mm-hmm. And so that's some of the ways that we have to work through the process. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Congressman, for your testimony and your work on Oregon's behalf back in Washington. The issue that I want to raise is, well, first of all, I want to make a general statement about the importance of the I-5 corridor as it relates to trade and the investments that are necessary there to keep commerce healthy. Whether we talk about the Columbia River Bridge crossing, and as you're likely aware, the efforts underway to begin that discussion, whether it's the environmental impact statement and the beginning of that process and the funds necessary to move that along, or if we come back down I-5 to the I-5 I-84 connection, the need to improve that intersection is one of the worst on I-5 from its stretch from Mexico all the way to the Canadian border. So I just want to put that on the record that those are important. And I believe that in the reauthorization process there may be an opportunity to identify earmarks for those particular projects. But I wanted to ask a question about a proposal that Senator Wyden put on the table. I think it's a the proposal that he put on last year of bonding, and I believe he's called them Build America Bonds. I guess the question is your reaction to that, your response to that, any chance that while we've bonded a significant amount of resources locally at the state level to really take advantage of our interest rates and our need and the fact that we're going to build infrastructure that's going to last three times the length that the bonds were, is there any opportunity at the federal level to do any kind of bonding? Is it just is that just seen as something that is politically unpalatable? I guess I just look for your reaction to that.
This is an area that I would hope that we would be very careful in terms of how it will impact on our other responsibilities to you. We have, if we're not careful, we're going to be layering so much debt as far as what the federal government is doing. We're talking about borrowing maybe $4 or $5 trillion to set up private accounts in Social Security. There are, we continue to run massive deficits on the federal level. $427 billion last year, plus $180 billion of Social Security trust fund money that we used for other purposes. I am a little nervous about embarking on another round of federal debt that could make it very difficult for the things that you have to do on the state level, and which would make it more expensive, driving up your interest costs. And I would not want to have federal debt suck up resources that should be going to you that would be in lieu of support that we would give you that would be direct cash that wouldn't have to be paid back. There are areas, and I think you have been careful on the state level with the Transportation Commission to make sure that the investments that you have bonded are ones that are going to that make sense in terms of being penciled out. That you have the revenue stream and the infrastructure you build is going to last far beyond that period of time. But there are states, I'm thinking of New Mexico, they just kind of got into a situation where they bonded a little less judiciously and ended up basically starving the program over time, still paying off the debt and not being able to deal with the ongoing responsibilities of a major reconstruction, to say nothing of new construction. So I am... and there are other people here who can talk about depending on how a federal program that relied on additional indebtedness would have to be paid back. If not structured properly, as I say, it could choke off revenue supply in the long term. So I'm just nervous because I worry about the overall federal debt level. I wouldn't want it to substitute for money that we should be giving you that I think is your due, and that it may end up shrinking the revenue stream over time.
Just one additional, I appreciate that response. I think it'll be one that we'll watch, obviously, carefully. As it progresses. So I want to hit one other issue that you're more than likely aware of, and that's the Columbia River jetties and the mouth of the Columbia River and their deterioration over time, the need to repair and rebuild those. I believe that there's some money in the Army Corps of Engineers budgets to do that, but as we know, that those dollars are probably not enough in the long run, but there's a there's that need. If we had a major storm hit the Oregon coast, you know, there's a one in five chance that those jetties could breach, and all of the work that we're going to do on the deepening the Columbia River channel could be for naught, and that those mouth of the Columbia could fill in a relatively short time with sediment. So I just wanted to again reiterate the importance of one, the initial repair of those jetties, but over time the long term fix to those jetties as well.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, Representative Lewitt Brunner, I'm really thankful that you did come today and that you have, you know, that you know how the interest of Oregon and how obviously you do, and you're here and you're trying to help us, and that's something that no other representative is here today. Certainly, your comments on bonding, I think, are very important, and I think that we should all listen to them very closely. That when you build with bonded money, you're building with borrowed money that has to be returned, it has to be repaid with interest. And it's imperative that whatever we build must create the wealth, or help to create the wealth, to produce a revenue stream to repay that money. And I think you brought that very clearly, and I appreciate that. I think it's imperative that we remember that when we start borrowing money to build things. Thank you.
I am concerned that sometimes people think that they will just float a bond, like that's some other source other than the revenue stream to pay it back. I am hopeful that there are ways that we can, over the course of this session, there may be some ways informally to continue the conversation about how we coax more value out of the state's infrastructure, all of it. Rail, the waterways, our roads and bridges, transit. I'm mindful that you have lots of people that are knocking on your door. They have important things that they want. We tend not to look at it holistically, how the pieces fit together, one of the things that is coming increasingly clear is that it's not either or. It's not water transportation versus truck transportation versus rail. Oregon cannot function without the combination of them. And I would actually, I confess, the first major piece of legislation that ICE authored and sponsored and carried in this legislature was creating a state transportation commission and requiring a comprehensive statewide multimodal transportation plan. I continue to think that we need to look at how those pieces come together. We are, as I mentioned, I hope going to reauthorize the Surface Transportation Act in the next few months. But it's not too early to be thinking about what the next reauthorization, the T4, because you are working with communities that are at a long-term horizon. It takes sometimes several years just to sort of be able to put the pieces together, and then there's the environmental work, there's the planning, the engineering. It's not uncommon for these major projects to take a decade if they're done right. So our ability to think through where the state is going and how the pieces fit together, rail, truck, aviation, water, the passenger car, the transit, the Amtrak, is something that I would be willing to be involved with some informal conversation with you, come down again or meet in some convenient place, because we need to be thinking what the next steps are. I am concerned that people are coming to you now with ideas that will take 10 or 20 years
the I-5 crossings, for instance, or some of the potential for a greater intermodal connection. And we need to be working together so that we can plot a path that we're not wasting, apropos Senator Wissett's point about the coaxing the value of the investment, that we're making replacing our bets right for the long term. And it's something that I'm spending a lot of time thinking about and would welcome to know what you're doing as committees, or how we can work together to make this seamless with our Transportation Commission and not... Well, I see many states that are driven by the moment, by something that's political or popular, or it's a crisis. The I-95 bridge collapses, or there's somebody that gets organized first because somebody else doesn't have their act together. And it's parceled up, and you don't get the value of the investment. And I would hope that in Oregon we could stay ahead of the game, and I would welcome that conversation with you.
Representative Barr, I know your schedule prevented you from being here to hear Congressman Bernal, but do you have any comments or questions for him?
I don't want to make you have to go through everything again just because I was late. So I think the only question that I had was when you were talking about the next Transportation Investment Act, what level is it? I've heard 280 something. Is that what level we're looking at?
It's moving north.
Good.
It's moving in the right direction.
Okay.
The administration has added more than $20 billion to their opening offer. Now, I don't know if that's their final offer or whether it's part of the negotiation process. The Senate last Congress passed a level of 318. Our committee had a bipartisan majority for a $375 billion bill that we were not allowed to bring to the floor, but we passed something that would have contract authority, I think, at 290. It was in that ballpark. We are hearing from every organized group that this is an area we need to be making a larger investment rather than a smaller investment. In fact, I've been involved with transportation legislation now 32 years, and I have never seen a coalition like this. It goes from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to the environmental groups like the Sierra Club. It's bicyclists and it's trucking interests. The people who put down the asphalt, the many companies that we have right here in Oregon that are doing outstanding transportation work. I faced the toughest group I've ever encountered on transportation issues last Wednesday in our nation's capital, the Women's Federated Garden Clubs of America. I mean, these
women, I can believe that.
So, Representative Byer, I am impressed that the public is ready to go.
Good.
The administration is moving, I think, off where they were, and there is strong support by a majority of both the House and the Senate. One stumbling block that I would mention, and I will say it just because a couple of your colleagues weren't here when I mentioned it, is there were rumors as we were leaving town last week that the reauthorization process may move away from some of the work that's in our committee by some of the forces in the House of Representatives that were less interested in this sort of this balanced approach that I mentioned, and that it may get caught up in the donor-donee state controversy, where if a lot of money flows to that, it's actually going to shortchange Oregon, and it's likely to take away money from other sources that we have benefited from everything from historic preservation to transit to renovation of the Albany rail station. which would not bode well for us. So it's a little bit in flux right now. If we listen to the public, you'll like the bill. And there is an attempt to mark it up in the course of the next 2 weeks, so some of that may be, one way or another, may be clearer for you.
Thank you. I'm going to thank you so very much again for being here today and in giving us an opportunity to have a conversation with you about transportation. And I hope that you will be able to stay in close touch with us and vice versa so that we can continue the conversation. We are beginning our hearings now. We'll begin when you leave this afternoon with Senate Bill 71, which is the Connect Oregon bill. And I intend to have a number of hearings on it as long as people have information that they want to give us. So we'll be moving along through the session and getting as much information as we can. I think your advice is so good that we need to be thinking not only of now, but in the future, because it does take a while. And we have had to react somewhat to some crises. And sometimes you don't have a choice. You just simply have to do that for the good and public safety of people traveling. But we certainly want to move ahead. And I do believe people look to Oregon for a lot of things. I think that Oregon is a very thoughtful state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can think of no more important piece of legislation for you to start that discussion than Connect Oregon. And I am hopeful that in the course of your deliberations, you will be able to have as part of the framework for that legislation what will work over the course of the next 10 or 20 years, the longer term. I'm personally very excited about that and would look forward to working with you to help promote it as necessary and look forward to being of any assistance we can to you and your committee. Thank you for your courtesy.
All right. Thank you. All right. We have a lot of interested people here today, and I'm happy to see that. We're going to begin this afternoon with a public hearing on Senate Bill 71. And just for everybody's information, I'm going to continue. We will have the Highway Cost Allocation Study Report on Wednesday. We'll do exactly the format that we're doing today. We'll then continue with Senate Bill 71 on the 28th. I plan to continue if we still have people that want to testify on Senate Bill 71. I am hoping to get as much information as possible during these hearings. So if you haven't planned on testifying today and would be interested in testifying on Wednesday or on the following Monday, I hope that you'll do so. And so with that, I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 71. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 71 authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds for transportation projects. It does specify the use of those monies. I have given you a section-by-section kind of breakdown of what's in the entire bill. I will note that we have received a potential revenue impact. This measure does have a subsequent referral as well to Ways and Means. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. I'll call first Chris Warner, Director Warner, and Chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission, Mr. Stuart Foster. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Roger, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Chris Warner. I'm from the Governor's Office. With me today is the Chair of the Oregon Transportation Commission, Stuart Foster, and the Director, Bruce Warner, of the Oregon Transportation Department. I'm just going to say a few words and turn it over to Stuart and to Bruce, but I think it was a very nice segue to have Congressman Blumenauer here to talk about the importance of transportation investment in terms of where we need to go in the state, as a state, in terms of growing the economy. The governor has mentioned both this in the Oregon Business Plan speech, they've been working on this, and also in the State of the State, how critical it is that we make these investments in the other non-highway modes of transportation to make sure we keep our economy going, keep our communities safe and prospering, and making sure that we are making those strategic investments for the future. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Chair Foster to talk a little bit about what the work that the commission has been doing in the governor's office at the governor's direction, and then Director Warner will talk specifically about Senate Bill 71.
Members of the commission. I'm Stuart Foster, Chair of the Transportation Commission. A multimodal system of transportation is critical to Oregon's economy. In September of 2004, the governor asked our commission to assess what the state needs to connect all modes of transportation. The governor asked us to open a dialogue with the various stakeholders associated with the different modes of transportation. As a result of our discussions with the rail, marine, air, and transit stakeholders, we have drafted Senate Bill 71 for your consideration. There is consensus among the stakeholders that Connect Oregon is a necessary and critical step in unifying and balancing the Oregon transportation system and its various modes. The Kent consensus is indicative of the 11 letters of support that are attached to my testimony. The use of lottery dollars to fund Connect Oregon makes sense. Lottery dollars have been used in the past to fund individual marine, transit, and rail projects. Senate Bill 71 would establish the funding to commence making our transportation system work more efficiently and effectively. And I would interject at this point that this is a modest bonding proposal, but it is critical. We need to make these type of investments in a transportation system if we're going to be competitive in the 21st century. The Oregon Transportation Commission fully supports moving forward to make investments in all modes of transportation. We need to make these investments to remain competitive, to address the tremendous growth in freight and the other impacts on the capacity of our system. These investments need to be made strategically around the state so that we can get the biggest bang for the buck, to use a cliche, and so that we can really jumpstart and make this do some exciting things on connecting the systems. These investments will provide jobs and economic opportunity by moving goods and moving people through improved connections between the various modes, thereby enhancing and improving Oregon's economy. Thank you. And Director Warner will now give you the details on the bill, including the proposed amendments.
Good afternoon. Senator Bridger, Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, the Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I think my role is to really discuss some of the things that we've heard in talking to the stakeholder groups, and frankly, some of the things we think need to be changed in the bill that is before you to accomplish and address some of those concerns. I think it is an important bill. It does provide funding for multiple modes of transportation. And as our chair identified, it really is to look at where those modes of transportation connect and to give priority to those areas where the transportation modes connect and in ways that improve the movement of goods and people and really are promoting jobs and the economy for the state of Oregon. As we've been working with our stakeholders, we've heard a number of comments, and many of them are very good suggestions and changes. And I think if you have my text, testimony in front of you, it probably piggybacks very well with your staff's review on a section-by-section basis. So if you would pick up, if you want to pick up my testimony, attached is a sheet that looks like this, which is section-by-section, some of the suggested changes that have been made that we think should be fit into the bill. Of course, we're going to be working with legislative council because they need to decide how the final language for the amendments will actually be incorporated into the bill. But I think there are some good suggestions here. So moving through this, if I could, Madam Chair, members of the committee, section one, what we believe needs to be clarified is there needs to be flexibility to provide grants or loans. And in the current bill, I think your staff identified one section of the bill refers to grants only, and another section to loans and grants. So we want to make it clear that that loans are a portion of the package that will be made available as a tool to fund needed transportation projects under this bill. Under section two, there was a blank for the dollar amount, and obviously we need to establish, the governor recommended $100 million as the maximum limit of the bond proceeds that would be part of this this bill. And then I think very important to a number of the stakeholder groups is to add a little more clarity to the criteria that the commission would utilize to select projects. In addition to the project that says that under section 3 that the commission will give priority to projects that facilitate the transfer of people or freight between or among the various modes of transportation, and to give priority to those projects that provide mobility or travel conditions on two or more modes simultaneously. What we are suggesting with our stakeholders is that we want to make it clear that projects should be given priority where they create jobs and further the economic development in the state of Oregon. The next thing that we ought to be looking for as a criteria is making sure that we select projects and give priority to projects that are ready to move forward. In other words, get the projects out there, get the money into the economy, and create that incentive for the state. We also wanted to make it clear that, from many people's concerns, that projects, we want to have projects that do not require ongoing commitment of state resources. So in other words, the commitment to the project, we need to figure out ways to make sure that those continue on without having additional monies from the state, and to give priority to projects where sponsors or supporters commit more than the required 20% of match. This is a concern to some because you want to make sure that you're not just providing, whoever provides the most match is going to get the project, because you have to have the other pieces of this also coincide. And we've also added then, suggested adding a criteria which would say that there needs to be equitable distribution of projects throughout the state. There is a fear that the majority of this money would go to the Portland metropolitan area, and I think the desire is of the governor's office, the commission, and the stakeholders to make sure that we put the money on projects that are worthwhile. And if you look at what we've done in the OTIA program and the distribution of the limited amount of short line rail, we want to assure that there is equitable distribution throughout the state of Oregon. And then we would also like to say that we need to have a catch-all criteria that says let's add something in there that gives the commission the opportunity to provide additional criteria only upon no consultation with our advisory groups and those others that will be working on the projects. So this is something that worked very well in OTIA, and we'd like to see that continue in this bill. So moving on in section in that same section, we also wanted to make it clear that, again, there is no funding in this bill available for highway pieces of projects that would be funded out of this program. So essentially, the bill limits our ability and says we cannot use any of these dollars to fund projects that can be funded through the State Highway Trust Fund. And that means that we need to work together with cities, counties to identify other highway funding or portions of projects that may be necessary to actually complete the modes and connect the modes of transportation. In Section 4, what we are suggesting is that you remove the language creating public transit and rail advisory committees in statute. Concerns have been raised about increasing the number of statutory committees, and frankly, I and the department have that same concern. And we are suggesting that the Transportation Commission will oversee the selection of rail and transit projects because they're part of the department. But if we need to have advisory groups, we can establish those through the commission, and they don't need to be put in statute. And also, we believe that we need to remove from Section 4 the criteria that would be considered by other groups looking at their individual projects they would bring forward, and really make it clear that the criteria that were outlined in the previous section of the bill are the criteria that we want those groups to look at when they're evaluating their individual projects to bring forward for consideration. In Section 5, there's no suggested changes at this time. Section 6, we do need to add something in here. I think this gets back to what your administrator mentioned, or maybe a fiscal impact. We need to make it clear that there's an opportunity and that the funds that the bond proceeds could be used by the Department of Aviation, the Department of Economic Development, and the Oregon Department of Transportation for oversight and management of these programs. So we want to make sure that's an eligible cost as part of these bond proceeds. And in Section 7, we're still working with Legislative Council to essentially amend and clarify the sunset date of 2008. If there's going to be loans or certain portions of the sunset that we need to take out, and so we're suggesting that it be limited or repealed to Sections 2 and 5 of the bill rather than all the sections of the bill. And we also know that we need to work with Legislative Council to make sure that we provided amendments to deal with the provision of loans, what happens with the payments on those loans as they come in after 2008. So that's one we don't have specific language on, but we'll work with Legislative Council to come up with that. So that is really the changes that we're suggesting. I think there are good changes. We'll make the program and the Connect Oregon better. What I wanted to let you know, along as with our chair, is the department does stand ready and willing to implement this program and oversee it, and we look forward to actually addressing some of the other modes of transportation, like we were able to address the highway and bridge problems through the Oregon Transportation Investment Act. So I think that will conclude my testimony, and I think we're all here to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. You've given us our homework. The committee will, of course, need to make the changes in the bill that you have suggested. And what I'd like to suggest to the committee, unless there is some absolutely pressing questions that you just have to ask today, what I would like to do is to put on notice those of you, and I'll do this all during the hearings, that you be ready to come back for invited testimony so that we can then begin to go into more detail with the presenters. We have a number of presenters today, but I do want to open to the committee if there is something that's very pressing that someone needs to ask. Okay?
I do.
Yes, Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a precursor for those who are coming forward, not questions, but just a few comments and concerns so that maybe as people come forward, they can address those rather than have to ask the question. Three things, I think, in particular. Number one, and I appreciate the work at looking at some amendments. Number one, I'm really concerned about trying to be too geographically spread. I mean, I know the political part of that, but then you also can get to a situation we don't get anything done because $100 million is not a lot of money. And so I'm looking to see how that ties into things. Second of all, for people who are testifying on the bill is, I know you're looking at loans a little bit more. I think it's really important if we're going to make these dollars go far that we look as much at matching and loans as much if more so than grants. I think that's very important, I think, in looking at this. And number three, I'm concerned about some of the committees that might oversee this when we have a trade advisory committee that we've already established that represents these interests. I'd like to have some comments as people come forward as to why we don't use the Freight Advisory Committee rather than try to create some other committees. And so if there will be questions, I'd be looking for from future testimony.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Metzger. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your testimony today. Calling up next will be Jessica Harris. Adamson, excuse me, Jessica. I can't get used to that. And John Bollea. That goes.
Madam Chair, good morning, or good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris Adamson, and I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. We're here to talk to you about the Connect Oregon package. I'm going to turn it over to my 2005 president, John Blair, with Stacey and Whitbeck.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us today. My name is John Blair, and I'm a senior vice president for a heavy construction company called Stacey Whitbeck. We build railroads, transit work, port work up and down the West Coast. I'm currently the 2005 agency president, so that this bill is actually kind of timely for not only my construction company, but also for the AGC. I'm here today on behalf of 1,100 members of Oregon Columbia Chapter, whose company builds roads, bridges, schools, marines, terminals, airports, and transit infrastructure to support Senate Bill 71. As the vice president of our company, I have a great deal of experience working for multimodal transportations. Our company works up and down the West Coast for state and local governments, transit agencies, shoreline railroads, and port authorities. We're one of the top 10 transit contractors in the U.S. In Oregon, we are proud for our work, projects like Interstate Max and the Portland Streetcar. AGC has been a consistent advocate for transportation infrastructure. Often the kind of infrastructure we've talked about has been roads and bridges, and the need for preservation of the infrastructure is significant, but we urge the legislator to act this session to address those issues in a meaningful way. But today we're pleased to talk about more important the importance of continuing investment in other modes of transportation as well. Connect Oregon will help the state continue to position itself as a premier gateway to reap the economic benefits of the explosive Pacific Rim trade, a position that will help Oregon agriculture, manufacturing, and other industries compete in the global marketplace. We support a Connect Oregon package that would include funding for heavy rail, marine, air, passenger, and transit systems. An investment in these facilities will play an important part in moving Oregon's economy forward, and a reinvestment in them will help Oregon's economy recover as a whole. The need for a multimodal investment strategy is long overdue, and we are ready to be a partner in implementing such a package. Connect Oregon will have other immediate benefits as the construction gets underway. Current economic data indicates that for every $1 billion spent on construction, 26 new jobs are created in other industries. By making these investments quickly, Oregon has the added advantage of using the construction of these projects to boost the economy while placing in place the framework to help provide for a stronger economy in the future. In short, it's a win-win. When we support this bill that would fund real projects, create real jobs, and meet real needs. Finally, I can assure you that there are plenty of Oregon contractors, subcontractors, and workers ready and able to take on the work that will be generated by this package. Oregon companies and Oregon families will benefit from the dollars of this program. AGC supports the concepts contained in the bill today. We understand that the bill will be subject to a great number of discussions and amendments. It is our hope, however, that the major thrust of this bill, that is, the reinvestment in all four modes, will not be lost as the bill emerges from the Senate. Thanks for the opportunity. If I can answer any questions, or we can answer any questions, just let us know.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Bollea, if you would let us have your written testimony so that our staff could get copies to each one of us, we would really appreciate it.
Sure.
Very much. Any pressing questions? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Next is Larry Phipps and Ken Armstrong.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Armstrong, and I'm here this afternoon representing the Oregon Short Line Railroad Association. With me is Larry Phipps, Portland Western Railroad, and also the current president of the Short Line Railroad Association. I also want to mention, incidentally, that I have another client that's going to be coming up after me, Gary Neal with the Port of Morrow. One of my clients is the Oregon Ports Group, which also has railroads. So I'm in the unusual and pleasant circumstance of representing three of the modes that are in this bill. I am also a past chair of the Freight Advisory Committee under ODOT, and one of the folks that was involved with the creation of that, not only at the administrative level under then-Director Chronicum, but then statutorily in the form of House Bill 3364, I think, in the 2001 session. So a lot of history here, and I'm very pleased to be before you in support of Senate Bill 71, because I think it really does, in a very real way, fulfill some of the promise of the Freight Advisory Committee when we got that up and running. And before I turn this over to Mr. Phipps to talk specifically about Oregon Short Line Railroads, I want to briefly touch on the questions that were raised by Senator Metzger. First of all, as far as geographical distribution, we think that that is in fact critical because you see the short line railroads and the ports represent and serve primarily a lot of the rural areas of the state. And it's critical that we have some investment in those areas to make sure that our rural communities, particularly those that have suffered in the areas of the decline of the natural resources industries, have the ability to stay competitive and promote the job creation and economic development investment efforts around the state. Secondly, as far as looking at matches and loans and grants, I think that is a very in-play question right now. It's something that we are we're engaged in discussions with the governor's office and with ODOT. I think that there are different ways to take a look at that. I know Mr. Phipps has some specific comments on the loan question relative to the short lines, and I'll let him address that. And finally, as far as the Freight Advisory Committee goes, I've heard a lot of concern about that, and frankly, I think that some of the concerns that have been raised about, just because this hasn't directly come up, talk about House Bill 2110, which establishes the, or proposes to establish a Rail Advisory Committee within ODOT, I think that's something of a red herring as far as this issue goes. The Freight Advisory Committee is going to be the body that is involved with vetting the projects and making recommendations. I think every single person at the table that's involved with Senate Bill 71 supports the notion of the Freight Advisory Committee having an active, very important role in pushing those projects forward. And I think both the short line railroads and the ports stand aggressively in support of the Freight Advisory Committee and the role that it's going to play. And I don't see any duplication of effort out there, particularly if, as Director Warner has suggested, that we look at not having some of these committees that are discussed in this bill and in 2110 be statutory, but instead be advisory only. So with that, certainly we're able to answer any questions, and then turn it over to Mr. Phipps.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, Vice Chair Whitsitt, Senators and Representatives, my name is Larry Phipps. I'm President of the Portland Western Railroad and President of the Oregon Shoreline Association. I serve on the Freight Advisory Committee also. I have presented written testimony, and we have talked about these matters several times in the past. And so I want to focus my comments on a couple of the questions that have already arisen. One is that short line railroads are very capital intensive. In the case of upgrading from old lightweight rail to today's rail, it cost about $250,000 to relay 1 mile with secondhand rail. So if you look, for example, at a 10-mile branch line that currently we're operating on 75-pound rail that was rolled in 1901, and we look to upgrade that with 115-pound secondhand rail, it would run for a 10-mile branch line. It would run about $2.5 million. Generally speaking, the Oregon Short Lines are handling line carriers. They don't participate in the line haul revenue. They get a flat per car fee for their services of gathering and distribution of the traffic. So if we take our 10-mile example and we say that nominally you have an average revenue per car of about $300, and in a well-operated railroad we'll have an operating ratio of about 85%, which would mean that you have about $45 profit on our 10-mile branch line that has 1,000 cars a year. If you do the math, you would see that on for example, a loan basis, you with the profits that you made on those 1,000 cars on that 10-mile branch, you could repay that in 55 years. So I think that that speaks to one of the reasons that loans for short line railroads haven't really caught on too much. The mathematics and the economics don't work. There's a federal program, the Railroad Rehabilitation and Infrastructure funding, it's RRIF, that has been in place since about, I'll guess, 97, 98. By December of 2003, three loans for a total of $15 million had been approved, and that's on a package that has that was for which there were $3 billion. So those have been slow to go, and I think it's important that we keep that in mind. If you look at the situation with matches, in 2002, House Bill 3446 provided $2 million for Oregon Short Lines in the form of grants for infrastructure improvement. That $2 million with the matches led to an investment of over $5 million. The same happened this last year. There was another $2 million, and I feel certain that it too will, with the matches, will lead to an investment of about much more than double that. I think matches are probably appropriate in some circumstances. One of the problems with the federal loan program, the RRIF, is that in order to qualify, basically many of the short lines had to prove that that they absolutely could not get funds in any other location. And in so many of these cases, it's not a matter that funds can't be found someplace. It's that you must justify any investment. And when it takes 55 years to pay off the relaying of 10 miles of rail on one of our branches that serves some of these lumber mills at Stimson or at Willamina or in Klamath Falls or Gilchrist or wherever, that you still have to make an economic case for it. And so that's, like I say, I have presented written testimony. We've talked about some of these issues before. And we look forward to answering any questions down the road that you may have. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions? All right. Thank you. I would say to you also that you may be called back after the committee has had a chance to look at the bill in its entirety and some of the changes, and then we'll get to more specific questions.
Okay.
All right. Next, Gary Neal from the Port of Marl.
I won't say anything about it.
That's all right. You better be there.
I forgot my glasses. I'm sorry. Oh, those are bicycles. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Marl. If you're not familiar with where the Port of Marl is, we're located about 165 miles east of Portland along the Columbia River. The Senate Bill 71, Connect Oregon, as it's so called, is a very important piece of legislation that is long overdue, and we really appreciate this committee's interest in that effort and the governor's office as well. The modes of transportation that are identified in this are all parts of some of the connections that we have at the Port of Marl. The Columbia River, Interstate 84, and the Union Pacific Main Line all intersect at the Port of Marl, and so we're heavily involved in all those modes of transportation. We have rail spurs. We're, as a matter of fact, we have awarded a contract to install a unit train offloading facilities at the port, installing 18,000 foot of trackage, and that's an important link to the freight mobility that we have in our region. We have container terminals and bulk handling terminals as well, and the export activities and our natural resources that we have in our region are very critical to use all modes of transportation. The cost of those improvements are very, very high. Infrastructure is not inexpensive, and they're long-term investments. We're a public entity. We serve the constituents in our region as part of the state. We reach out and serve a lot of customers in Idaho and in other locations that are using the interstate system that we have there. And the steamship line issues that have recently been a concern in the Portland area have caused additional concerns with our shippers and the export side of things. And these additional rail activities are important to keep them competitive in the world marketplace we have as well. So these investments that that we try to make and that this bill addresses are really critical for us to maintain the economic viability of the region we serve. And I know that we continue to make investments on a regular basis to all of our facilities as we can afford to do that. And the grant dollars that are out there are very critical as it relates to the infrastructure because it's just like the highways and the rails and the terminal operations. They serve our customers and our shippers and our constituents, and we serve a broader public purpose that is important to keep in mind as you consider how this bill is written. And but anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to make comments here today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I appreciate very much your being here. I was in a committee that you hosted at the Port of Morrow, and we were certainly impressed with the work that you've done, the creativity and the innovativeness was really impressive. We enjoyed it very, very much. Questions? All right. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Next, Tom Gallagher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I feel uncomfortable doing this without Kim's help. My name is Tom Gallagher, and here representing the Schnitzer Steel Industry and the Urban Developers Coalition. The Urban Developers Coalition has spent the last 6 years working on siting industrial and employment-based land and development on that land. And we found consistently that the biggest impediment to that development is transportation infrastructure. So in those terms, we're happy to support this Bill 71. Although it doesn't provide for highway infrastructure, it will help us on the other infrastructure situations that we see in the state. But as you know, there isn't any money for most of our infrastructure. And what we're looking at in the last two sessions are lottery bonds. And my concern is that we've got the goose that laid the golden egg, and we're trying to shake all of the eggs out of it in the short run here. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what I'd like to see in this bill, including some comments on the amendments that the state has brought forward. I think we have to look at spending this money pretty wisely. That brings me to 3 points. The first one is the selection criteria for the projects. Whether or not this goes to geographic or not, I don't think so specifically, but I think that the process as to how these projects get moved forward through the process to the OTC is fairly important. And I'm a strong advocate of using the Freight Advisory Committee, which has all of the shipping and the freight moving interests on that committee. It's one place. It handled the politics of the bridge bills very well, and I think it would do well for the moving of freight. The people part of this, the transit part of it, I don't think should go to the Freight Advisory Committee, and the department can set up another way to handle that. The second one is that I think we should have stricter and more targeted criteria for these projects. And I concur on the side that maximizing the dollar value here that we have, $100 million lottery dollars, that as much as can be done in loans, as much as can be brought to the table in terms of matching money, those ought to be part of the criteria for those projects. I'm going to suggest on page 2 that the project be a capital improvement project with a long lifespan. I don't think this should be short term. The dollars are going to be, the bonding is going to last over 15 years, and we're going to have something that's going to be longer than the bonding. Number 2,
I think they should be directly related to some other part of the planning process. I think whether it's regional economic development plans or marine master plan or some other part of the planning process, there ought to be some interconnectivity here. There ought to be, it ought to fit in to what everybody else is doing and not just be a project that comes forward just from one piece or the other. Again, just talking about maximizing the dollar value here. If you're connecting two sources, if you're tying rail to marine transit, that's the smartest way we can spend our dollars in this case, because that's capital infrastructure improvement. The second thing, or the third thing, is it shouldn't be able to be funded from another source. I mean, this is a special fund of dollars here, and it's going to get tied up, and it's not the biggest amount of dollars, and we ought to get the best projects we can out of it. The project should enhance other transportation projects that are already in the system. So it ought never should be a standalone project. And the last thing I want to talk about is how fast do we move this money. I've heard talk about trying to get all the projects in by March 2006 and trying to get the money out into the economy. Well, I know the bridge money was out there for construction. I want to see a lot of that money spent as quickly, as fast as we can. But I want to see the best projects under the criteria, under the tough criteria, not just the best projects that are already in the planning system. And I think there's a lot of projects out there and a lot of opportunities out there that are only going to get started or are going to take longer to play out than early the beginning of next year. So thank you for your time on this, and I will be involved in this bill as long as I can. Thank you.
I appreciate your last paragraph about you have some comments coming from some others that perhaps at a later date. I appreciate that. And so as you've heard me say to others, be alert that you might be asked to come back and answer those questions for us. All right. Thank you again. Pat Egan.
I'd actually like him to leave the room if he could. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pat Egan. I'm representing the Port of Portland today. At some point in the future, you may also hear from some of our individual folks, whether they're shippers, folks that we deal with. Members of our commission also have a great interest in this bill. Steve Corey, who many of you may know his service on the Transportation Commission, is now on the Port of Portland Commission and has taken an interest in this bill. You've got me today. Rather than throw up another PowerPoint presentation and put you all to sleep, I tried to be brief today, keep this all in one page, and hopefully to leave you with three basic points. The first is our statewide mission and how that relates to the content of this bill, and I think projects that you may or may not see in your own individual districts. The second is really the coming challenge that some of you, I think, have heard a little bit about in terms of the freight volumes that are going to increase, the population increase, and the congestion we already have virtually on every mode of transportation and the needs as they stand. And I put in that highway as one of those modes. And the last is, I think, the opportunities that something like Connect Oregon presents to the state of Oregon, both in economic development, better transportation management, and serving the needs of many of your constituents through lower shipping costs, creating jobs, and those kinds of things. So around that, just as background for the Port of Portland, obviously we care about every one of the modes, again, including highway. We've got a lot of data on this. Roughly half the rail cars in the state at some point move through our properties. So we deal with a lot of shippers from every corner of the state. On the aviation side, freight cargo, aviation cargo, roughly 95% plus of air freight goes through the Port of Portland. Depending on how you count the numbers, a half to a quarter of marine goes through one of our facilities. But obviously that's coming from someplace. It's not all produced. It's not all shipping in or shipping out to the Portland metropolitan area. It's shipping in from every corner of the state. And so, as I said, we have relationships with shippers and customers throughout Oregon. As far as the statewide mission goes, and then I'm going to try to touch on some of the questions raised by Senator Metzger, we do have a statewide mission. We have Last year, for example, we had a record year in marine, and despite what you've heard on the container side, our overall shipments in autos, in grain bulks, mineral bulks, and containers were up across virtually every category. 2005, I guess we'll see, but wheat, for example, is one of the major contributors there. Hay exports from the Willamette Valley and further south were also a contributor there. I'll just touch on aviation as well. Our numbers have been going up. We're back up past September 11 numbers, both in passenger and on the air cargo side, so we're feeling quite good about that. But again, those people and that cargo is coming from someplace and going up to someplace. As far as the second point that I want to touch on, the challenges, virtually every credible source that you hear from says that freight is going to double on the West Coast in the next 15 to 20 years. Whether it's 15 or 20 really is immaterial. It is a huge challenge for all of you and certainly for us. We believe that, again, back to the highway side, more needs to be done there, but when you look at what many other states have done, particularly our neighbors to the north and the south, they are meeting some of these challenges with investments in the marine and on the aviation side. I'll just draw your attention under, I think, my fourth heading there, national competition. I've done, since I've come to the Port of Portland in league with a lot of our research folks, a look at what a variety of other states have done, and I've just put in the smattering, but particularly including Washington and California in terms of what they've done in rail and marine investments. You see Washington State in 2003 dedicated nearly $300 million to rail investments, and over the last 10 years, this is actually an initiative that was referred by the legislature. California has put nearly $2 billion toward rail in the form of grants, and both of these are grants, I would add. I've also thrown in a couple of other states that have put money toward capital investments in the form of loans and grants, but some key states there that have really grown their economic development programs through state investments. Which is a good segue to my last point here, which is really that there's a great deal of opportunity, I believe, both in the urban and the rural setting throughout Oregon. In the Portland area, for example, the jobs that are distribution and logistics jobs are very high-wage jobs. They're roughly 10,000 above the average wage for the region. And we believe that and have a lot of tangible evidence that indicates that a number of companies are really spending more and more on freight distribution and logistics, and less, for example, on warehousing. And I've dealt with a number of rail folks on this, and they kind of kid that the warehouses are really converted from real estate to their boxcars or their freight cars or the containers that you see, and that's true in many cases. And it's a cost savings. That a number of companies have invested personnel and time in figuring out how and when to get the products just in time to either to the customer, to the production facility, or through other means of processing. On the rural side, I would draw your attention to things like the small ports, the short line railroads, and there's a third category that I'm. Oh, the smaller airports. Again, these are in many ways collectors for us, but not necessarily just for us. They in some cases will go, for example, from Eugene directly to Denver or to other places on the aviation side. We believe that investments not just in the Port of Portland but throughout the state make a great deal of sense from a public policy standpoint. I would agree with Senator Metzger that we don't want to peanut butter this thing and create a thin layer of investments that don't have a long-term impact. I think that's wise to make sure that whatever we're doing, whatever the Transportation Commission ultimately is doing, are making key investments in places that make a difference long-term. But I think a lot of opportunity exists. Gary Neal, for example, indicated some of the investments that he's making. Those are good jobs, quality jobs, and hopefully long-lasting jobs for the folks that he serves. The last, before I leave and answer any questions you may have, just to go through some of the questions raised by Senator Metzger, back to the geographical spread, obviously we have hundreds of millions of investments in transportation infrastructure in the property that we own and operate for Oregonians. Much of that has been paid for with customer dollars, some of it's been paid for with grants from government entities. And actually, over time, back before Measure 5, a fair amount of it was paid for with taxpayer dollars in the form of property tax. We today are under compression under Measure 7, and receive about $7 million annually in property tax. And I've indicated to this committee before, and I'll indicate again, Port of Seattle, which we are in direct competition with, gets about $59 million annually in property tax. Obviously we are concerned about how these dollars are spent, but I guess we would argue that in addition to Portland investments up river, for example, Port of Morrow and Port of Umatilla are key transportation assets for us for our operations. In terms of spreading the dollars out, loans, grants, matching dollars, I think in any case, whatever projects the Port of Portland would bring forward, we would be bringing a significant amount of match to the table. Again, we invest a lot of money both in maintenance and construction on a regular basis in transportation infrastructure, but the competition that we sense from particularly the West Coast ports, I think forces us to look at something like Connect Oregon as a very positive thing. Last thing I would say, as a member of the Freight Advisory Committee and as someone who has watched it work from a number of different vantage points, I would agree. I think that in any case, they've done a very good job in looking at the transportation projects that were presented to them post-OTF3. I think they would continue to do good work there. The comment I guess I would make in looking at Senate Bill 71 as it's drafted today, I think the intent, from my understanding, is to include as many folks as possible to make sure that we're not missing any projects, that we're not missing any contribution that someone could bring to the table. But obviously, I think the Freight Advisory Committee is the best representative entity in terms of vetting various projects. I do have to add that as our aviation director is on the aviation board, I sense very personally that the aviation board would want to also participate in that. And I think there's a way to work that out. I think obviously reasonable people can disagree on the individual bits and pieces of the process, but at the end of the day, I think that could be worked out. So thank you again for your time, and happy to answer any questions.
I thank you for those comments. I particularly appreciate talking about the end of the day, because I think that one of the things that all of us need to realize is how extremely important it is that some of the entities that have not been included in OTO 1, 2, and 3, now we need to address their issues. And it is a serious, serious matter for the state of Oregon. And so at the end of the day, we want a good package.
Absolutely.
And that's going to take a lot of conversation, a lot of listening, a lot of respect, and a lot of being creative in what we put together. And I appreciate your being here today. I would also ask if you have groups that deal with the Port of Portland that they take advantage of the hearings in the next 2 days. If not, that you give a list to Judith that we might, for the interest of the committee members who might want to focus in on certain groups, that they might be able to call them back.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right.
Thank
you. Yes. Senator Whitsett has a question.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ubin, what has caused, in your opinion, the recent rather dramatic reduction in container shipment to your port, and what can be done within the scope of Connect Oregon to reverse that rather sharp trend?
Excuse me. Avoiding my daughter's cold. Madam Chair, Senator Whitsett, there are a variety of factors that have come into play there. One that they indicated to us directly, Caroline and Honda have pulled out, is the very rapid growth in trade in China. Additional Trans-Pacific trade has created such an amount of volume in such a rapid period of time that really nobody had predicted, that they've had to dedicate their shipping resources, that being the actual container ships themselves, to a tighter shipping schedule. they pulled the Port of Portland out, even though they, by all indications, were making money on both directions, eastbound and westbound, because they wanted to have add a port in China. And in both cases, both of those shipping lines did that. I would add a couple of things. One, that the channel itself has been a major challenge for a long period of time. All of the container shipping companies that we deal with have regularly indicated that they'd like that additional 3 feet in about 3 years ago if they could. We are obviously dealing with that as aggressively as we can. The state contribution, the state bonds were sold last August. The state of Oregon, state of Washington has also put their money on the table. The federal government put $9 million on the table out of the FY 2005 schedule. With that money, we'll be able to do about 25 miles of the challenge of the channel. In the next calendar year, we hope to, best case scenario, by 2007-2008, be able to have the full 56 miles of the 106 miles that need to be dredged done. And so we are getting a lot more inquiries back from container companies than we have received really at any time in recent history, companies that are looking to add Portland back in. And that's very encouraging. The last thing I would say is your point on Connect Oregon, and that is infrastructure. We have basically 1.5 berth of the for the size of ships that we're talking about that would fit between 40 and 43 feet to serve more than one carrier. We would need long term to add an extension to Terminal 6, which is the international the international container service dock at the Port of Portland. We believe we would be looking at Connect Oregon as one potential resource there to serve that hopefully expanded market over time. So while the news is very bad over the last year, we believe that good news would be on the way, and we're certainly. Thank you, Senator. Whatever you need. Full service. And we're certainly hopeful that, that we'll be able to restore them over time. Thank you.
All right.
Any other questions?
Wow.
I'll get to drink my water in peace.
Thank you, Chair Bergman. Hope you drink. I did.
Yeah, sorry.
You can have a drink of water.
Hey, hold on.
Chair Berger, I appreciate your leadership on this issue, and Pat, I truly appreciate your leadership in bringing Connect Oregon to the legislature. Part of the rationale I understand for bringing Connect Oregon forward is because we're trying to increase our ability to compete with states such as Washington and California. And one of the issues I've heard over the last couple of days is the notion of requiring a portion of money being allocated to be returned in the form of payments back, i.e. debt service. I'm curious, how enthusiastic would you be about Connect Oregon if you knew that you would have to be serving debt on projects that were funded?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's a very good question. I think in any case we'd be enthusiastic about the basic concept and notion that transportation investments from the public sector shouldn't necessarily recognize modes, that we ought to be looking strategically about how and where the investments are made. I guess the thing I would add to it is obviously as we have a great deal of debt service that we serve both the airport, separate financial question, and over time at the Marine. On the Marine side, we would look at it really in competitive terms, whereas I'm mentioning the ports to the north and the ports to the south, and even I would add Vancouver, B.C. to this equation, they have substantial grant dollars, cash, that they have received from whatever public entities that they work with, and I guess I would say we would certainly welcome any opportunity to assist us in financing, but as has been stated, I think, earlier in testimony, there are significant loan programs that exist today through the Economic and Community Development Department, and if this were converted to a loan primarily program, I think that wouldn't necessarily change the mix, at least for the public operators. I won't speak for the private operators, Rail and some others on that. I think if it was a healthy mix of grant and loan, as I think Director Warner indicated, that would be a positive thing. And again, we work with all kinds of capital and all kinds of scenarios, so we try to make it work, but I'd be much more enthusiastic on the, again, not just from, gee, grants are nice relative to loans, but really from a competitive standpoint and looking at how other markets are served with capital, we'd like grants much better.
Follow up.
You know, one observation I would share with the committee is if we truly want the state of Oregon to be competitive, we need to look at dropping the cost associated with moving a container, whether it's down the river, up the river, down the coast, up the coast. If we're going to if we're going to require our ports or any of our other partners to allocate a per unit expense on every container to help them service debt, it's truly going to take away from the purpose of Connect Oregon, and it's going to take away from our ability to compete. And so as this moves forward, whether in this committee or any other committee in the building, I think we ought to be very cognizant of that fact.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, now that I think I have my voice back, I'd like to respond to that and also add an answer to Senator Witz's question. We've done a study, and it's no surprise that moving a container from eastern Oregon from the Mid-Willamette Valley is cheaper over the Port of Portland than, say, through the Puget Sound or through Oakland or through Los Angeles and Long Beach. And in some cases, our former customers are forced to do just that. And on a temporary basis, there may be some pricing that's advantageous, but over the long term, it just costs more to get the container to one of those other ports that I've named. The additional... And we believe it's in the order of $200 to $300 per box to get just to the Puget Sound relative to the Port of Portland. The other answer that I would add to Senator Woods's question is the length of the channel. I mean, I have to be honest and add that in. It's a 106-mile channel. It adds minimum 8 to 10 hours per leg of that up to Portland, and that's certainly a challenge that we can't necessarily change that. There's certain transit time up to the Puget Sound, obviously, and the cost of pilotage that's associated with getting over the Columbia Bar and up to the Port of Portland. That's a significant issue that's brought up, but we believe that if it's made cost competitive, that we would restore some of the service to the Port of Portland. Thank you for your comments, sir.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Just for the benefit of the audience, I hope that you recognize the effort that we are making during this session to bring policy and budget together. The hearings on the budget side have guests that are coming in and listening, people that are trying to be sure that we are tracking together. And I think it's extremely important, and it is a change. And so I hope that that all of you recognize that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam.
Our last presenter today will be Cindy Robert. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, you can call him.
I don't have it here. Okay. Just come forward.
I'm sorry, Senator Bircher. I guess I wasn't clear. My name is Cindy Robert. I'm with Oregon Transit Association. I'm also with Union Pacific Railroad. I put on my sheet there, on the sheet, because it was the second one that I'd actually like to testify on Wednesday. I have two people from the transit industry coming with me to speak briefly. We'll get all our transit done within 15 minutes. And I have your hair, but we're hoping to do that on Wednesday.
All right. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. All right, with that, I'm going to... I want to close the door. Can I close it for today? I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 71. We will be meeting in this room again on Wednesday, committee. We will have the highway cost allocation study. All right? And if you're the business to come with everybody, I'll probably need you.